Sometimes we'll ask at the end of the Dhamma talk before we do the chant if anybody would like to dedicate the merit of their practice to someone during the chant, and we ask them to say their name aloud. And it's really mum's the word. Usually nobody says anything, or they hold them in their heart, because that's the alternative suggestion. But allowing people to write these names down, we're looking at something like a dozen names, and it sort of confirms this teaching of the Buddha, that we are all connected, by the birth, aging, illness, and death process. There was a monk, do you know who this was that used to greet people, like groups like that? Welcome, brothers and sisters, and aging, illness, and death. That ringing a bell? Definitely one of the time monks. I don't think it was Ajahn Chah. And I've always wanted to sort of incorporate that, but I don't know how it would land. We do have new people every week. Greetings, brothers and sisters, and birth, aging, illness, and death. But that's the reality. That's among other things. So we have at least those four things in common. Recently, we had a monastic here who he's coming back in July, and I'm just thrilled. Ajahn Kurnadamo, and he referred to our path here as the conveyor belt that only goes in one direction. That's the conveyor belt of birth, aging, illness, and death. And, contemplations like those are meant to incite compassion for ourselves and for others. If we have these things in common, then everybody is suffering in some way that we can relate to, and everybody's delighting in some way that we can relate to, that we can have compassion for, that we can have empathy with. And they're also meant to incite effort. So if it's a conveyor belt moving in one direction, how are we spending our time is the question. There's a famous kind of question that comes out of the canon, the days and nights are relentlessly passing. How are we spending our time? I know if I feel comfortable answering that question out loud. It's kind of a mixed bag. I'm lucky to be in this community. I'm lucky to have 20 years of practice behind me. I'm lucky to have Kalyanamitta, who support me on the path. So a lot of what I do is Dhamma. A lot of what I do is practice. And that feels really fortunate to me. And just kind of increasing a continuity of mindfulness, increasing that willingness to look through the lens of Dhamma. Increasing that ability to support myself and others is a priority to me. Contemplations like this can also be sort of anxiety provoking. Oh, wait. Oh, everyone but me. Everyone but me is on this conveyor belt. Or, to younger people, get impatient with older people. I can't hear that well anymore. I'm not even that old, but really, it's going downhill fast. I can't hear that well anymore. I can't see that well. I can't have pain, the body's sort of falling apart. And but my kids, they're kind of preteen, teenage, and they're shockingly patient, with me. They'll say something a few times and, hey, what? I guess I can't hear you, and they'll just come around and say it again. If I need to sign a permission slip or sort of help them through something, they know to show up with glasses. That will expedite the process. But often young people do get irritated and frustrated with older people who can't move fast enough, who've been through things, who have past experiences that they're grappling with, even in even today. And the same with older people can be frustrated with younger people. They're still learning, they have no respect. They're moving in every direction. But a contemplation like this, kind of this wraparound, being connected and birth, aging, illness, and death, we can see that we all have this in common. We were once young, we were once born, we were once completely supported by other humans. Giraffes get born, they stand up, they move along. A lot of the animal kingdom, standing on their first day, like eating, drinking, they can do their thing. Humans are uniquely dependent on other humans to even survive for a day. So somebody helped us survive for a day, that first day. And then the next 365, and then the next 12 years. And then when we get old, people support us and shepherd us through that process. And it's overwhelming, to a degree when we think about it. We might not even like those people. We might not get along with them. They might have had a lot of unpleasant traits. We might not like ourselves sometimes. But, in contemplating this connection between us all, then we can start to move toward gratitude. Just even just the simplest appreciation that we got through that first 24 hours is pretty huge. And now we're here with each other in this beautiful space, being supported, being loved. And in this framework, it's considered very fortunate to be a human being who's come in contact with the Dhamma. And so if if that's your framework, if that's something you value, then you can contemplate that. Oh, I got through those first 24 hours with the help of other beings. And somehow I've come through this lifetime to be right here in this fortunate place, in this fortunate body, in this warm building with these supportive people. That's kind of a miracle. Ajahn Amaro, who is a monk of 40 something years, I think, in this tradition, quite delightful and peppy, very academic, but also just hilarious. He's quite a presence. He majored in college, he majored in psychology and biology or something like that. I'm probably getting it just a little bit wrong, but essentially he got a degree in body mind, body and mind, double major body mind. Because he wanted to know how it all works. He was very curious about the mind and then practical enough to study science too. And so I've heard him speak a number of times on how it's, he talks about how it's shocking that we get up every morning in these bodies that they actually work up. Our arms hang from our shoulders and our feet move, and that when we get a cut, like it all just whatever's in there doesn't just fall out. That these, sort of skin over our sinews, over soft bits and liquids of our bones, they carry us and they carry us through. And it's kind of crazy. Like it doesn't seem like it should work when you start to look at it and think about it. We're very vulnerable, extremely vulnerable. We're not turtles. We don't have shells. We're not tanks. We're actually just not a whole lot, if you look at it. But that's what we have in common. That's what's beautiful between us. That's what we can support in each other. This vulnerability, this being connected in birth, aging, illness, and death. And we can use that to bring up empathy, even for that which we do not like, do not want, don't want to be associated with. There's still something in us that knows we're connected in some way. And then just, this. Don't see hair's falling out. There it goes. Thing, these names on this list. It also is for me, it's a contemplation and knowing that everybody has something heavy in their heart. All the time, there's something heavy. There's also delight and joy and fun and donuts, but all of these names, probably, I don't know all the stories here, but they all represent maybe something a little more difficult, a little more, a little bigger than ourselves. And so then allowing that to be a contemplation as we walk through the world with people we don't know, with people we don't like, with people who we love, with people we'll never see again. Everyone's got something here that they're carrying with them, and it's useful to allow that to connect each other, I think. I was thinking, I don't know why this popped into my mind, but when I was meditating, supposed to be meditating, advice that I've gotten over the years from the monks in this tradition, my teachers are all monks and nuns in the Ajahn Chah lineage. And I've been practicing with them and doing retreats with them and for years, couple decades now. But I can really only remember one piece of advice from each of them. And it's something that I've held on, onto as a teaching for many years. And I just keep coming back, some kind of contemplation from each monk. I keep coming back. A couple of them are from books, but by and large, things that I've heard in person. One that I connected with, and this is Ajahn Sumedho, who's the most senior Western monastic in this tradition. This isn't something I've heard him say in person, but it's a teaching that I connected with many years ago. And it's this idea of goodbye forever. I know this is you. We're going to get 0 stars from this talk today for sure. But I love this concept, goodbye forever. And he would say that, when he took his leave from community, goodbye forever. And it was his way of no, letting things go. It was his way of staying present in the moment. It was his way of letting contemplating impermanence. He might have been planning to come back the next month, but really we don't know, do we? Now, I started using this concept with my kids when they were really young. It's got to be hard having a Buddhist parent. You really got to suck up a lot. But how we used it was that we would, we're really terrible at transitions in my family. Like, if we got to get up and go, it's just absolute chaos. It's done. Like, there's shoes flying and feelings flying and every time, no matter where we're going. It's just like absolute just chaos. Weird transitions. And it never felt good. The kids would go to school or we would be walking out the door, we'd have to go somewhere. And it had been so much transition chaos that the by and large, the feeling when the door finally shut was like, God, Ugh. And that is not a great feeling, actually. I realized that I didn't want to feel like that every time someone left the house, or one of us, or for all of us, or whatever. I wanted us to at least acknowledge that we needed to be good to each other while we were together, because the future is uncertain. And so during these transitions, I would say, I explained it to him. I didn't just throw it at him, and I would say, goodbye forever, and it would just kind of bring everybody into the present. And they would, oh, goodbye forever, goodbye forever, goodbye forever. Knowing full well, that forever was like 3:20. We had seen each other after school or whatever it was, but we used it for a couple of years to bring us into that present moment awareness of how we affect each other and to connect as brothers and sisters in birth, aging, illness, and death. And I didn't tell them that. They didn't know. But goodbye forever was this really beautiful sentiment to help us all come in to the moment. And it really did. It just stopped everybody and made us, gave us a reason to kind of open to what we love, to what we like, to what was beautiful about each other, and then to go our separate ways. Goodbye forever. It's a little segue there. You don't plan these things, I swear, but here we are. So next week I'll be gone, and the week after that, and the week after that, we're going on a, my family's taking a trip. It's the first time I've taken the kids on an international trip. So it's kind of a big stinking deal in a way, you know. And it's been a long time since I've been away from the community for more than a week or two, actually. It's been, I don't know how long it's been, other than retreats. Maybe last summer. I don't know. It's been a while. And so it's kind of, I'll be around this tomorrow and this week and stuff, but then I'll be away from this service for a few weeks, and it feels a little bit like goodbye forever, you know? Like, oh, I like you. Like, I like us. This is really good what we do here. And no matter if we all, well, never all of us. All of us and all of us will never all be here together again, probably, like this group, this particular specific group. So in a way, it is goodbye forever, isn't it? You know, but these conditions have come together at this time to support these people in this moment, and we can appreciate it now. And I do, I feel that way. So thank you.